We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Mike Florio is at Pro Football Talk on Twitter, PFT and NBC Sports. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Mike, how's it going?
Going great today. How are you guys?
We're good. It does appear that the Bears' place-kicking follies are now the stuff of being nationally lampooned. Do they deserve it?
Yeah, well, they deserve it because, look, this is one of the easiest positions in football to fill. You go out and you find a kicker, and the kicker should be, for the most part, and a lot of old-school coaches think this, seen and not heard. You go about your business, and you find somebody who can come in and make their kicks. And I just think the added pressure of being the next guy to succeed, Mr. Double Doink, I think that's freaked out a lot of these candidates, and everything they do now is being scrutinized. And, you know, whoever does emerge from this morass as the starting kicker will have gone through a hell of a lot more than trying to make a 47-yard field goal into the wind on a Monday night to win a football game. So, you know, some way, somehow, this ends well for the Bears, but I feel like there's still a few more chapters before we get to the happy ending.
Is there any way they could have kept Cody Parkey? I know we got real emotional about it in the time, and we talked about it quite a bit after the season ended. I don't think we're going to go back and relitigate that, are we?
Well, they could always go back and sign him again if they want to do that. We do What If Wednesdays to fill the time in the offseason, and the What If today was, what if the Double Doink actually goes the right way instead of the wrong way? What happens with Cody Parkey? And I think it was all to be determined because he would have had to prove himself the next week. There's going to be a kick that he either makes or doesn't make. And, you know, I just think they're ready to move forward. And because they are interchangeable and you can find kickers anywhere and everywhere, the problem is the Bears all of a sudden can't find one anywhere. So I think they just need to be creative. I've suggested in the past getting Sebastian Janikowski out of retirement. I tell you what, talking about guys who are retired, but a guy who was never a place kicker in the NFL, check out Pat McAfee's Twitter feed. He banged one with a crosswind, and he was a very good place kicker at West Virginia University. He was drafted to be a punter, and he always used to say that he wanted to be the kicker as well in Indy after Adam Vinatieri retired. Nobody expected McAfee to retire before Vinatieri, but you almost need, at this point, something completely outside the box to try to break this cycle, and I think McAfee and Janikowski both would have the experience and the poise not to get freaked out by this enhanced scrutiny that's being given to the Bears kickers.
Creativity aside, don't you figure the most likely thing for the Bears to do at this point is to grab whatever veteran kicker gets cut off someone else's roster and roll with that guy?
Yeah, that's the thing. Kyle Shanahan, the 49ers coach, recently said regarding Robbie Gould, who's holding out, waiting for a better offer under the franchise tag, all I care is if he shows up for week one. I mean, that is the easiest plug-and-play position in football. You put the kicker out there, you get him comfortable with the holder, you get the long snapper on board. It should take a half hour to get everybody up to speed. So there will be kicking competitions elsewhere. There are guys currently under contract with other teams. And you know what? Someone may try to do. Someone may try to squeeze the Bears to give up a conditional seventh-round pick, like they already did for Eddie Pinheiro when they made the trade, I think, with the Raiders earlier this year. So, you know, there's an opportunity to hijack the Bears a little bit, but at the same time, there will be opportunities to sign somebody free and clear when the cuts come around. But that's getting up, you know, right against the start of the season, and the Bears play Thursday night. The final cuts are on a Saturday, and the Bears then have a five-day turnaround if they do wait, and there's no intermediate step anymore. It goes 90 down to 53. So, you know, we may get into that preparation week, those final few days, and still not know who's going to be the kicker for the opening game against the Packers.
Do you think that a kicker who becomes available, however, who may have an opportunity to have multiple landing spots, might think twice about the Bears? Like you say, I think you used the term freaked out. Might somebody just say, yeah, I'm sure I could be fine there, but I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to get involved in whatever that is.
All things equal, it's going to be a factor, right? If the money's equal, that's a factor. Just like playing outdoors in Chicago is a factor. If you've got equal money between the Colts and the Bears, you're going to go to the team that plays in the dome most of the time. So I think it will be a factor. The question is, how many other teams will be trying to pursue whichever guy it is that the Bears decide that they want to target? But you're right. It could be that they need to wait for the one guy that has no other option. And of course, that guy's probably going to be the most likely to get freaked out by the circumstances.
Talking with Mike Florio here, Pro Football Talk on Twitter. You know him and see him everywhere. Smart people talk about football. Carson Wentz has a new deal, and it looks like he took less money than he could have gotten otherwise. Am I reading those financials right? What's Wentz up to?
Well, and it's a strange process in the NFL. Agents like to analyze deals based upon the new money for the extension, the value per year of the new years that get added on to the end of the current contract. So when you look at Carson Wentz's deal, it's 4 new years that average $32 million. That puts him at number 4 among all quarterbacks. But when you look at the value of the contract from the moment he signs it, because they don't extend the contract, they rip it up and replace it with a new one, it's a 6-year, $25.5 million deal. And I guess it's a win-win, at least for now, because Wentz has had injuries in each of the last 2 Decembers. Wentz hasn't really accomplished anything, although he was on track to be the NFL MVP in 2017 before he tore his ACL. The Eagles, on the other hand, they've gone all in with Wentz. They could have kept Nick Foles. They picked Wentz over Foles, so they had to have some security beyond this year and next year because they had him for 2 more seasons. But if Wentz ends up staying healthy and wins the NFL MVP award this year, which is not beyond the realm of probability, then he's going to feel like he got underpaid. And within, really, the next 2 or 3 years, as the salary cap goes up and other quarterbacks start making more, and let's say Jared Goff gets $36, $37 million a year in new money, and Patrick Mahomes gets his $40 million per year deal, there's a chance that Carson Wentz, by 2021, 2022, is going to say, I got screwed on this deal. And, that's when it gets awkward for him and the Eagles. And I guess the Eagles would call that a good problem to have if their quarterback is playing so well he feels underpaid. But for now, I guess it's a fair approximation of where he is. In a few years, though, he may not be happy with where he is.
Talking with Mike Florio on Sports Radio 670 The Score, we got the official news yesterday, the release from HBO, that the team that's going to be featured on Hard Knocks is indeed the Oakland Raiders. And I, as an avid viewer of that show, could not be more excited for so many reasons. A coach with television experience, a general manager in Mike Mayock, a nominal one with television experience. The fact that it's not just Antonio Brown and Richie Incognito and all of last year's Clemson team and everybody that's there. This will be, in my estimation, Mike, the closest we've gotten to finally just melding fact and fiction with the ability of so many people involved to use these cameras to benefit whatever narratives they want to put out there.
And you throw on top of it the fact the Raiders don't want to do it. Right, this is something they're doing reluctantly, and I'd love to know what kind of deal was struck to get the Raiders to agree to do it. Did they get some consideration apart from Hard Knocks? Did they get extra high-level license to cut anything that could possibly make the team look bad? But I think one of the reasons John Gruden didn't want to do it is he knows that he will play to the cameras. He knows the cameras will be a distraction from what he needs to be doing, because once he realizes the cameras are rolling, he has learned that ability to communicate to a camera. And I remember, and I think we've talked about this before, Matt Nagy and John Gruden had their introductory press conferences the same day in January of 2018. And Gruden's was at least 20 times better than Nagy's. But it doesn't matter. What matters is, can you coach? But Gruden knows how to play to the camera, how to talk to the camera, how to communicate. And there is a risk there that you worry too much about putting on a good show for everyone and you lose sight of why you're there. And I think that's going to be a lot of the tension that he's dealing with. And, depending upon how they edit it, depending upon how they shoot it, that could make for a very good presentation. But I think this has the chance to be the best one since the Jets in 2010. And, you know, if you thought you heard a lot of profanity from Rex Ryan 9 years ago, you're probably going to hear even more now.
I guess my only worry, because they don't want to do it, in terms of a production, in terms of a television show, they could make the fact that they don't want to be on this show almost like a character. You know, they go to Gruden and he's, I don't want to be here and I don't want these cameras here. And then that becomes part of it. It becomes too much of that rather than the behind-the-scenes football stuff, the, you know, guy that's close to getting cut on the roster, the you know, all these kind of stories that we've heard from Hard Knocks now get told through the prism of just, well, we don't want to be here in the first place. Now watch us not want to be here.
Yeah, they got to be careful on how much they play into that, and that's where editing is going to be critical. I remember in 2013 when the Bengals were on it, James Harrison wanted nothing to do with it and would not talk when the cameras and microphones were present, would give the finger to the cameras from time to time. And you can only play that game so much. And that's why I think the Raiders, before they agreed to this, they got something. I can't imagine the NFL just went to the Raiders and said, hey, guys, you know what? You have to move to Las Vegas. You get the draft next year. You're going to be in the Super Bowl rotation. Just shut up and take it. I think that the NFL had to have given them something to get them to say yes, even though there's a formula for coming up with a mandatory Hard Knocks participant. I don't think the NFL ever wants to say, thou shalt do it. They want them to ultimately choose to do it, even if that choice is the result of some sort of a bargain. But you're right. There's too many other storylines to get caught up in. The Raiders don't want to be the Hard Knocks team. And there are some great storylines. And one of the storylines that I'm very intrigued by, and I know the Raiders spent a lot of time trying to throw water on this, is Derek Carr really the guy? We're going to get a glimpse of Derek Carr that we've never really seen before. And we know franchise quarterbacks when we see them and hear them. What we see and hear from Derek Carr, is that going to convince Raiders fans and others that he's the long-term answer in Oakland? Because a lot of people think he isn't.
So the Titans have added at their facility a giant sandbox. They have a big pit of sand because they want guys working out in sand. Apparently, this was a New England thing. And, of course, if New England does it, it has to be good. The Buccaneers have also added this. And apparently, their trainers think it's a low-impact alternative that gives some resistance. And it builds up the stabilizer muscles as well. Is this a new thing, an old thing becoming a new thing? And I remember there were athletes that used to train by running in the sand along the beach. So maybe there's just some old-school truth to it.
Hey, Rocky and Apollo, right? One of the best scenes from Rocky III, sprinting on the beach. Now, I think they were running on the hard stuff. If you ever tried to run on a beach, you want to run on the stuff where the tide has just been, because then you don't dig in as much. But it really does provide you that balance, that resistance. You have to put more in to get your foot up. And, hey, if it's low impact, if it keeps guys fresh, if it keeps guys healthy, and I agree, if the Patriots do it, like, do it, right? I mean, I don't think that it's quite as simple as cherry picking the various, you know, superficial techniques the Patriots use, but I think Mike Vrabel understands the philosophy and how Bill Belichick has put his football team together and the things he does to keep his guys fresh. And, you know, one of the stories we had on PFT earlier this week, in the last 6 years, the Patriots have played 7 seasons, or the last 5 years, they've played 6 seasons, but you know, they're playing extra games. They're keeping their guys healthy, and anything they're doing that is aimed at reducing the wear and tear on a player, I think if the Patriots are doing it, anyone should do it.
So after everything the Rams went through with Todd Gurley, will he and won't he and is he going to be good enough? He's got quotes yesterday saying, I had bigger problems with his knee to worry about coming out of college. And obviously he did. He had a reconstructed knee with his ACL. This is small. Do you believe he's talking about the issues that he'll face performance-wise once he gets on the field, or just the stuff within his own head to come back? How much can you count on Todd Gurley?
Well, if you watch him as he makes those comments, now he's not a very colorful guy, so it's hard to read his demeanor. Look, there's real concern there. I mean, this is a guy who was a workhorse tailback. He was the 2017 NFL Offensive Player of the Year. This guy has been very, very good, and now all of a sudden this knee is betraying him, and it swells up without any specific injury. And I don't think he can carry that load. They've drafted a guy, Darrell Henderson, from Memphis in the third round that may get plenty of reps this year. And at some point between now and March, they're going to have to make a tough decision about Todd Gurley's contract, because he's already got $35 million in hand for last year and this year. There's another $10.5 million that fully vests next year. And if he's not carrying the load, and there's so many young running backs out there you can get for peanuts in comparison, they're going to have to decide, do we want to keep this guy around? And so, you know, that may be one of the reasons why they're waiting on Jared Goff. They may want to make a decision long-term about Todd Gurley before they make a decision about their quarterback and how much they're going to pay him. But this is a real concern. And, you know, good for Todd Gurley to get paid last year when he did, because I have a feeling, a strong feeling, that the Rams would not give him the contract that he signed last year if they were doing it now.
Meanwhile, Mike, my phone is blowing up here with people who are listening who know. They say the Bears actually also added a big sand pit last year.
Oh, good.
So you can count the Bears in those that are they're ahead of the curve in NFL fashion. They,
you know,
too.
I think we can tie it all together. They should do the kicking competition.
Yes!
In the sand.
There absolutely true.
There it is.
Absolutely true.
If you can make a kick out of the sand, right? It's like golf. If you can make that shot out of the sand, you can make it on the fairway.
Well, that means no practice swing, no grounding of the foot, and you hit a, what, about a 3/4 of an inch behind the ball and finish the shot.
Gotta finish. Don't let up.
Finish. We will end on that terrific thought, Mike.
Thanks,
thank
Mike.
You.
All right, see you guys.
That is Mike Florio of ProFootballTalk.com.
Who told you we have a sand pit? Who told you the Bears have a sand pit? All right, don't share the sources.
Maybe a media member. And
maybe
a former player at exactly the same time. Both texting me to say, you know,
all right,
the Bears have one.
We'll say what's up for me. It's been a while since we've talked
about it. I don't know if the former player is embittered, but says they didn't have it when I was there. No.
Well,
no.
Let's see. That guy was there forever. Did so I don't know. All right. Well,
did you see the latest in the David Ortiz story?
I saw some reports, and the way that things are being framed, I'm not quite sure what to believe and what not to believe.
All right. Well, because here's the thing. I read like the final paragraph of the actual very carefully constructed Associated Press story.
Yeah, the one from yesterday.
And the final paragraph had some eyebrow raisers in it. Mm-hmm. And that's being filled in by some other reports today about how this was not an accidental shooting.
Oh, my. All right. We got some big news on Big Poppy, it seems, when we come back. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This segment's brought to you by the Chicago Dogs. Tickets now on sale for the Chicago Dogs, your premier minor league baseball team. Get in the game this weekend with Mini Bet Giveaway Friday, the best post-game fireworks on Saturday, and catch on the field with Dad on Father's Day Sunday. Tickets at thechicagodogs.com. The Chicago Dogs, baseball with everything. So there was an AP story that I saw early this morning as I was just scrolling through starting the day.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating how the tone of this reporting establishes something much more sinister than we had been hearing yet. It says, beloved in his hometown, David Ortiz traveled the dangerous streets of Santo Domingo with little or no security, trusting his fans to protect him. Big Poppy's guard was down, even at hot spots like the Dial Bar and Lounge, where the Dominican business and entertainment elite can cross paths with shadier figures in a country where fortunes are often made in drug smuggling and money laundering. So they get into the police investigation, they go through the facts of the case, and they talk about how he was taken back to the United States, to Boston for medical care. And how many are involved for whom they're still looking right now. It says, Ortiz stayed at his father's apartment when he was there, was active on the social scene in the Capitol, hitting night spots with a small group of friends that included TV personalities and Dominican reggaeton musicians, whom Ortiz would help by connecting them with established artists in the genre. Ortiz couldn't avoid running across unsavory characters on the Santo Domingo social scene. But he kept his distance once he was warned about their shady backgrounds, according to a friend. He said he may have spoken with them, but he didn't know who they were. He really kept away from that world. Now, here are two paragraphs. Police are investigating, however, whether some brief relationship formed in Santo Domingo set in motion a chain of events that led to the shooting, a law enforcement official told the AP. The official declined to provide further details about the type of relationship or other aspects of the rapidly developing investigation. So that was the last I had seen until the Daily Mail in England broke this. Police in the Dominican Republic believe former Boston Red Sox star David Big Papi Ortiz was shot by two cops hired by a Dominican Republic drug lord.
Whoa!
Who believed the baseball player was having an affair with his wife.
Wow.
DailyMail.com has learned. Three law enforcement sources confirmed the motive on Monday as Ortiz recovered in the hospital. The drug lord has not been named. Ortiz's representative, Leo Lopez, denied the shooting had anything to do with a woman, but said it was the act of hired killers. He says there's no doubt it was the act of hired killers. If we had known there was a dangerous situation, he would not have been there at that moment. So it is it's a drug lord who believed the baseball player was having an affair with
him. Exactly.
So we don't know if he was or was not. All we know is all it takes is for an unsavory character with killers at his disposal and members of the killers to believe that that is the case. And my question is, if it's a hit, you know, I don't know. I would have to have, look, if you're a hitman or you've been a hitman, you know the rules on this stuff.
Yeah, go ahead. Call in. Let us know.
Right. Somebody who's,
identify yourself.
I was just going to say, aren't you supposed to shoot one shot? I mean, aren't you supposed to make sure if the guy's got his back to you that you just go up on a motorcycle? I thought the idea was to be certain.
There's the rule of the double tap. Yeah, I mean,
a little more certain.
I've watched both seasons of Barry. You know, he's a very careful hitman. I believe that's part of the premise of it. He does a lot of training of other hitmen, hit people in that. Do you ever notice that there are billions of shows about hitmen? How many actual hitmen on this planet can there really be?
No, we know from famous mob trial. You know, was it the Bull Gravano?
Yeah, but how many? I mean, we're talking dozens probably over the course of decades.
Oh, there's more than that.
Are you kidding? You know
how many hitmen? Look, if you're just talking about the Mexican drug cartels?
No, I'm just saying, but that's, foot soldiers are different than, like, the hitmen. Guys who you
like independent...
contract killers. I'm just saying that proportion of shows and movies about contract killers is so high in regards to the people who actually do that job on this planet. It has to be. There's not that many people that are willing to take that kind of contract wet work. There just aren't. Also, if you're not watching Barry, if you haven't seen it, go watch.
So you're saying it's someone who, in the course of their job, is killing people isn't the same as a completely independent hired gun.
Correct.
Just say, like, for whatever your purpose, I don't care what the reason is,
right.
I just kill people
like,
for a living.
Like, contract killer is one job that we've been presented with in this world. And then the other is like foot soldier for mafia or drug cartel or whatever that may involve a little bit of wet work, but not necessarily a contract killer.
Okay.
I think those are two different jobs.
I'm not going to name the emailer here, but a frequent emailer says, I've been to a ton of really dangerous places in my life, both in the U.S. and Mexico, and never really get worried, except when I went to the Dominican Republic. I know where he was when he was shot.
Wow.
I was told by multiple people to not go there under any circumstances.
I mean, I don't want to blame the guy who got shot for being in a certain place. I mean, that's horrendous to me, and I can't get my brain to that spot. David Ortiz, you know, because of his career, because of his charisma, all that kind of stuff, I love the guy. And when I heard the news, I was, like a lot of his teammates, really taken aback by it. But you start to formulate these reports in the places and circles he was in. That's really quite something.
Yeah.
To be of that fame, like to be of that fame, especially there, like the fame he has in the DR, and then choose to go to those places. I don't know that I can put myself in that
headspace. This is a big baseball thing, the idea of how you, once you sign somebody to a big contract, we forget the retired players, but the young players to whom you commit and trying to navigate these waters of them being allowed to go home and you kind of being worried about your asset going. And it isn't just the violence, it's the poorly lit roads. We spent a lot of time talking about, there was the Cardinals prospect that died in a high-speed collision, Yordano Ventura, who was also on these...
Oscar Tavares.
Oscar Tavares, thank you.
Yeah. Both.
Where the roads are poorly maintained and poorly lit, and access to ambulances and medical care in some of these areas is almost nil, and there's really no speed limits, essentially, and teams get worried during off seasons when players go home. I know that for a fact. They're very concerned, and this is just yet another one of the reasons for that very legitimate concern. Hell, we know it was Starlin Castro. how hard the Cubs said, look, you know, just we want you here. We would rather have you here than there, because I know it's your cousin or your friends or whomever, but your paths are going to cross with some folks with whom you don't want to cross.
Wilson Ramos was kidnapped, like actually kidnapped. There was a rescue mounted. Gunshots were outside. He feared for his own life. He got himself back into the major leagues. There is a current major leaguer who was kidnapped in Venezuela. Like, of course it's an issue when players go back to countries where these kinds of things happen, where they're made targets by their own success and fame, not necessarily the way that David Ortiz may have been made a target in this particular instance. But in this case, Wilson Ramos, just because of his future earnings potential, this was back in 2011, for those of you who don't remember it, just because of his future earning potential, was kidnapped and going to be held for ransom. That's part of the life. That's part of the thought process for some major leaguers when they go back home to their towns, their countries.
The 815 is mad for no reason. Stop referring to players as assets. You sound like a D-bag. They're assets. You've committed millions of dollars to them. They're your lifeblood. It's professional sports.
Sports is kind of debaggery sometimes.
Yes, that you
it kind of sucks.
If you have a problem with that concept, you shouldn't be a sports fan, because that's what pro sports is. You pay human beings a tremendous amount of money to do something for your business, to help your business make money and win games.
This guy from the 773 agrees with me on how many movies there are about hitmen versus how many people do the job. I agree. There's been a lot of movies about Godzilla. How many actual Godzillas are there? You know, think about that proportion.
Yeah, well, that's a good
point. There's so many Godzilla movies.
Yeah, you should have thought of that.
I've never seen a Mothra, but he's been in a bunch of movies. Is Mothra a guy or a girl? Have they sexed the monsters? Have we done that yet?
That's the next movie.
Sex monsters.
Sex the monsters. Doesn't the A in the end mean female? Wouldn't it be Mothra?
Mothra? La Mothra? Is that a... No, that's the wrong language. I don't think we have that, do we?
I don't
know. Are there definite articles in Japanese language? I have no idea.
That's a great question. We know it's King.
Is it?
It's King Ghidorah and not Queen Ghidorah. So I would assume that Ghidorah is male.
Or Ghidorah is of certain repute that they can just declare herself a king if she feels like it.
I guess that's true also.
It's possible.
I've never, ever in my life thought of that.
You've never sexed the monsters? You have to. Are you kidding me?
Not to this day. I was building little plastic models of these things when I was a kid during the first go-round.
Well, it's good that you weren't thinking about sexing the monsters then.
Where's Godzilla's wang? They forgot it. I imagine it's quite impressive if he's... I mean, I don't know if he, like, tucks it away in a pouch or something.
Well, yeah, scales or something like that. So I think you can tuck them behind there.
Right, but yeah. I never thought of that
I'm
before.
Pretty sure it's hanging in the on-air studio right now, or maybe that's some of the ductwork.
I don't know. Like, so all of, like, Rodan and all that, I mean, that's... It was Destroy All Monsters. That was my favorite of those movies.
Oh, yeah,
movies,
but
that had Godzuki. That had, like, the mini-Godzilla that looks like Keith Jennings.
You know that there is some Japanese movie, Sex the Monsters, that's just some sort of weird, gross online
thing. Like an anime thing?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's happened, of course.
Yeah, let's bring in Bill in Capitol Hill on the score. What's up, Bill?
Hello, lads. How's the Empire?
It's not well.
I'm suddenly picturing the courtroom scene with Godzuki and the lawyer saying, "Show me on the doll where he touched you." Connor, I was, you know, as one who's an ardent foe of capitalism as yourself, I'm surprised that you'd be so glib about the independent contracting in the hitman industry. I mean, like, the cost of benefits have gone up for mafiosi, so. I mean, there's no reason to suspect that they're not part of the gig economy like everybody else.
I suppose you're right. There's probably an app on the dark web where you can just hire your own hitman, something like that. You never even have to come into contact with them. You just swipe right for death.
Start talking more international hitmen. Stop talking hitmen. Have a good day, lad.
Thank you, Bill.
See you, Bill.
Texters are actually saying that Mothra is female. And in the newest movie, they confirm that she and Godzilla have... a relationship.
Oh my God. There's a sex scene in a Godzilla movie and it's not with people.
Wow.
That's amazing.
And if it's anything like Rocket Man, it's intense. I just wonder which scene is more intense, the one in Rocket Man or the one in the new Godzilla movie.
Neither of which I've seen, and both of which now I'm probably going to pay $14.50 to go watch in a matinee somewhere.
Yeah, I think you probably should.
I'm interested now.
The Midday Midway is coming up next. I have a sports anniversary of note, and I have a space discovery that might be a little troubling.
Follow-up to a follow-up, one of my new favorite shows, and a bar promotion gone very wrong very quickly. The Midday Midway's on the way. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, the Western Conference Championship. Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you. See you in October in the Midday Midway, presented by ABC Plumbing, Sewer, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Talked about the Bears' ongoing farce of a kicker tryout, whatever you want to call this. All three of them missed their 40-yard kicks yesterday. Chris Blewett waved this morning. And yes, make all your jokes. Get all of the jokes out of
please,
the way.
He's please a
kicker.
Get them out,
yeah. His name is Blewett. Uh-huh. And he missed the kick, and now he's waved. And now that leaves us with Eddie Pinheiro and Elliott Fry. And it will be down to them until someone else is just added because that kicker becomes available. As Mike Florio said, we may not know until the night before the opener against the Packers who the actual place kicker is going to be. But it is an ongoing headwind for a team with Super Bowl aspirations. We talked to Mike Florio. We also got into some of the details that are now emerging in this attempted murder of David Ortiz in the Dominican Republic.
Also yesterday, there was a soccer game, and a Miami bar has gotten itself into its own amount of trouble. American Social, you ever been to that bar as you've traveled through Miami, American Social?
I don't remember.
The bar, well, that means you did it right. The bar located in Brickell, I think, neighborhood in Miami, has a litany of promotions for the 2019 Women's World Cup as they're hosting the American Outlaws Supporters Group. That's the we believe that we will win group. The most notable is certainly free shots for every United States goal. In case you missed it, the women's team scored 13 goals in their win yesterday. Alex Morgan had 5. It is the largest blowout in World Cup history. It's the largest amount of goals scored. It's the largest goal differential.
Which matters. Goal differential in this phase is a tiebreaker, so that you cannot fault them for doing that. You've got to run
No, I don't fault them. Beat up on Thailand as much as you possibly can and win your goal differential. Get that done. But apparently, the patrons at the bar at American Social got 13 free shots, or at least at that's a lot of alcohol. And you know too, I mean, you've seen these bars, you've seen the watch parties for the women's team. They pack these places. You barely move from side to side. You go to a place like AJ Hudson's or the Globe or Cleo's or something for a soccer watch party. It is, I mean, everybody is packed to the gills in there and now really drunk, too.
Yeah, like the Globe. I had a black pudding and a white pudding and my shepherd's pie.
Man, they know what they're doing there, too. And they've got the old school, I forget the name of them, but the taps that are built into the bar, the old school English-style ones. Those are badass.
Happy anniversary to Doc Ellis's no-hitter that he pitched while on acid. 49 years ago today, the Pirates right-hander dropped acid, didn't think he was pitching, ended up pitching, and even though he walked 8 guys and hit somebody and allowed 3 stolen bases, he threw a no-hitter. I love NBC Sports lead baseball writer Craig Calcaterra. I love his work generally.
Oh, he's fantastic.
But his take on this is different, where he says, it's not about how weird and crazy it is that a dude was as high as a kite tossed a no-hitter. It's amazing and amusing. It's easy to make drug jokes, and because of that, they're kind of cheap. He said, my takeaway has been a lesson about how to approach life when you're not prepared for it.
Huh.
He says, what makes it inspirational is it reminds us that sometimes we're able to fight through whatever's clouding our mind or inhibiting our body, and sometimes things work out okay. Sometimes fate or chance allows us to prevail even when we probably shouldn't. Sometimes either randomly or by design, the cosmos balance out the scales a little bit. When we remember that it allows us not to sweat it too much if we get smacked down despite our best efforts, or to worry too much if we approach a day at something less than our best. Don't despair. It may just work out. There's also a great YouTube video of Doc Ellis telling the story with all kinds of cool animation about how really all he could see were the edges of the strike zone.
He didn't see. I was just kind of scrolling through it right now. I'll retweet the link. It's called No Moss Presents Doc Ellis and the LSD No-No. And it's all animated a lot like the fever dream kind of stuff and Fear and Loathing. But Ellis is talking about how he couldn't see the hitter. All he could see was whether he was on the right or left side of the plate. That's it. That's all he knew. So we have followed innovations in video gaming quite a bit here on the Bernstein and McKnight show. That's what you got here from 9 to noon on The Score. But mostly from the esports angle, as more and more leagues are investing in them. This is a piece of hardware that I guess has been put on display at the 2019 E3. It's the Electronic Entertainment Expo in L.A. And the fine folks at, I guess, Nintendo and Miller Lite have teamed up to put together something that 21-year-old me would have really been interested in college. It's called the Cantroller.
Okay.
It is a Miller Lite can into which they've built a haptic feedback video game controller. It's got the directional pad, up, down, left, right. It's got four buttons labeled X, Y, A, B. So I guess this must be an Xbox built in or something. And then start and select. There's a whole promotional video on the website and everything. And it is an actual...
It's just a novelty, though. There's no... It doesn't actually do anything better or innovatively, right?
I mean, you're holding a beer can while playing video games.
Is there beer in it?
I don't think that there's beer in it. I'm scrolling through the promotional video as best I can. It doesn't look like anyone chugs it like a Red Bull at Driveline or anything. But it does. It's got micro USB ports. You can plug the thing in. It's got the haptic feedback, so it shakes and everything like a Rumble Pack back in the day. And it's real too. It's not just a promotional thing. They've got sellable, buyable controllers out there. They're gonna be tough to find because it's a limited edition thing, but they are out there, and you can have one if you want one. And why wouldn't you want one?
Tell me if I should be scared. Scientists say they've detected a huge metal mass firmly embedded beneath a crater on the moon, possibly the remnants of a massive asteroid strike billions of years ago. I think possibly incipient Death Star. And let's say it together, that's no moon. According to a study published in April in the journal Geophysical Research Letters. Oh, it's awesome, by the way. Just so great.
Yeah.
That particular journal. You know, they've got the faces in the crowd for all the up-and-coming geophysical researchers in, like, high school and junior high and how they're doing.
Rick Riley's column in the back is great, too.
The mass is located 180 miles under the surface of the 1,240-mile-long South Pole Aitken Basin on the far side of the moon, the largest known preserved crater in the solar system. The lead author says, imagine taking a pile of metal five times larger than the Big Island of Hawaii and burying it underground. That's roughly how much unexpected mass we detected. They were discovered using data from NASA's Gravity Recovery and Interior Laboratory and the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. They think that the asteroid that formed the crater is still embedded in the moon's mantle rather than sinking into the core after impact. Other possibility, it's the remnants of a magma ocean with the oxides concentrating there as it cooled. But it's weighing down the basin floor by more than half a mile. I'm skeptical and much more suspicious. I think it should be investigated that somebody is building a base from which to launch the attack.
Could be Mothra, too. We don't know that it's not.
Could be. Anything could be.
You mentioned Chernobyl just the other day. The tourists
flocking to Chernobyl.
Oh, God, the tourists. And apparently there's been a whole bunch of Instagram folk running through Chernobyl and taking photos of themselves, because that's what you do in a highly radioactive area. There actually, I saw this one as I was looking through this article I'm going to tell you about. There's one of, it's not a selfie, it's a dosimeter. You know, which is, it's the thing that measures radiation. It's one of those. Right. And they're taking a picture of that with a 0.63 number on it while looking at the big shelter that they built over the reactor at Chernobyl.
Is that what they call a Geiger counter now?
I think they're different, okay. Or maybe dosimeter is what the Russians are calling it. That's what they call it all throughout the show, all five or six episodes of it, whatever it is.
Okay.
So Chernobyl is now the highest rated television show of all time, according to IMDb. It's the Internet Movie Database.
Wow.
There are issues with the way that website rates and reviews shows and whatnot, and obviously it's all going to be subjective. All ratings are always, and there you have it. But it's the highest rated show on IMDb. But what I, as I'm reading through this piece on Hollywood Reporter, what I didn't realize was that Chernobyl, the television show, was not shown on local TV in Russia. But it was
in Russia. Television come to you.
It really does. But it was legally available via the via a streaming site, which gained exclusive Russian rights to the popular series such as Game of Thrones. So this is where they can find shows like this. However, Russia is unhappy with the series, and it's planning its own version of Chernobyl,
oh my God,
in which they plan to blame the CIA. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You've got a massive nuclear disaster that's well documented by the UN at the time. Scientists who admitted what was going on, all this kind of stuff. And now there are a number of former KGB and Kremlin spin people working to put together their own show on Chernobyl.
So the CIA did it? They sabotaged it and caused it to melt down?
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. I guess so. Right. It's a great show. You should watch it.
That's the Midday Midway, and coming up next, we're going to make sure you know everything you need to know, everyone involved, how the course is laying out. The U.S. Open tees off tomorrow, and David Dusek of Golf Week is going to give you your primer to make sure you're the most informed fan you could possibly be, or gambler.
Yeah, maybe pick a winner here.
Maybe pick a winner looking at and listening to the recommendations of a guy who, if you've listened to this show, he's always got guys who are on that leaderboard. He gave you Francisco Molinari.
Oh, yeah,
he's given you some others. So if you want to leg up on the competition, keep it here for David Dusek joining us next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.